Is anyone out there? Help!
You cry out, but there's no reply. Just the eerie sounds of the forest where you and your companion have been hiking for hours, mostly in a circle. And now you seem to be hopelessly lost. What will you do? Well, have no fear. Suddenly there's a voice answering your cries for help.
Yes, I'm coming to help you. I'm a sales rep for Hike in the Woods Without Getting Lost Incorporated.
Well, sure enough, a well-dressed man appears, briefcase in one hand and a couple of soft drinks in the other, and says to you and your friend, "Just have a seat here on this tree stump and have a cold drink, and let me show you something to solve your problem." Well, after this brief introduction and his reassurance that all will be well, he begins his funnel presentation with these simple and precise questions. Well, how long have you been out here hiking? When did you realize you were lost? How often do you go hiking? Where do you think you left your vehicle? What kind is it? All asked in an almost casual, chatty way. And then he tells you he has a device, a tool, that can help you right now get back to your truck safely and quickly and assist you on all your future hikes. He shows you the price and says, "Would you rather make it cash or just put it on your credit card?" And he just closes. No units of conviction, no showing of the product, only a closing choice question. Now, if your will invest line is low, really low, you'd whip out the cash or a credit card immediately and make the purchase. But since you're a more cautious buyer, you give him an objection. "Hey, before I buy anything, I want to see it." Well, with a big smile, he says, "No problem." It's always good to see what you're getting before you buy it. Then he opens his briefcase, pulls out a small phone that has a viewing screen and some extra buttons on it. Smiling, he says, "It's the latest model for hikers just like you. It's a combination cell phone and global positioning system handheld receiver." "Wow," you say. "How does it work?" With a smile, he hands it to you and says, "It's very simple. Just like your cellular phone sends and receives signals from a ground-based cellular antenna, the global positioning system, GPS for short, sends a signal to a constellation of 24 satellites orbiting above the Earth." He instructs you to press a few buttons, and almost instantly, the screen shows a map of the area where you've been hiking, as well as your exact location. He goes on to explain that when he spotted your truck parked off the side of the road, he left his car behind it and marked its position on the GPS receiver. And then he demonstrates by saying, "You see, by using a signal from three satellites above, your GPS receiver calculates your exact position, shows it on your map screen, and then directs you right back to your truck. It even shows you which direction you're walking in and will correct you if you get off course." Well, kidding, you say, "Well, what else will it do? Find gold underwater?" "Well, I guess it could," he responds, "since it can be submerged underwater without damage for 30 minutes. And it gives you 100 names and phone numbers in a directory if you want to call your prospective friends." Well, you then ask how he happened to stop his car and come looking for you. With a smile, he says, "Oh, that's how I prospect for my customers. You see, this is such a beautiful area, and lots of tourists come here, and they walk in the woods and they get lost. And I end up helping a lot of people out here. So when I saw your out-of-state plates, I just started walking and listening for your cries for help." "Wow. Amazed and delighted," you say. "Can we buy this one right now so we can keep on hiking? And we'll always know where our car is." "Well, what do you think our top 1% club salesperson is going to say?" "What would you say?" "Of course, you'd close the sale right there, and your customer would be thrilled." Now let's review those 10 building blocks to the sale and see how they apply in this situation. First, the foundation, preparation. Oh yes, that GPS salesperson was definitely prepared and ready to do business. Then building block number one, the pre-approach. What you knew about GPS receivers, his company, and him. Well, his response to your cries for help certainly gave you a very positive feeling towards him. But what you knew about GPS receivers and his company was neither positive or negative. You didn't know anything. So building block number two, the approach, was needed in order to create a positive. Next is building block number three, getting your attention. Hey, you're hopelessly lost in the woods and help arrives. I'd say he's got your undivided attention. How do you gain that focused and riveted kind of attention from your prospects? Here's a list of the suggestions from message number two. Stating your purpose, mentioning a benefit, making a promise, paying a sincere compliment, arousing curiosity, showing a dramatic exhibit, asking a question, offering to be of service, making a startling statement, or using a referral. Our rescuer in the woods used a few of those quite well and then quickly qualified you with his building block number 4 funnel presentation. Once he knew your situation, he jumped right past building blocks 5, 6, and 7, the interest, conviction, and desire steps, and leaped over building block 8, resolve to invest now, and then went directly to building block number 9 and asked for the sale. Even as desperate as you were, you still said, "Hey, I want to see that thing first." And like a pro, he backed up and built his units of conviction, added need, use, and value, and then closed again. You know, this make-believe sales situation is really not so make-believe after all. In order to make a sale, all 10 building blocks need to be set in place. Either you or your prospect has to put each building block on the foundation that you've established. And it doesn't matter if you're selling a car, a boat, a piece of land, a computer, a plastic bag, a pen, or a GPS receiver. By the way, do you have a GPS receiver in your car? How about in your boat? Ever use one for your hiking or your camping trips? Or just for fun? Remember when they first hit the market in the late 1990s? Prior to that, the term GPS, or Global Positioning System, was known only to military personnel and scientists. But by the beginning of the 21st century, boaters, truckers, and other outdoor people began having handheld, inexpensive versions for their personal use. So why would so many people buy them? The reason is simple: to know where they are at any given time, in almost any situation. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you knew where you were on the sales presentation curve of prospect interest at any given time and could see it as clearly as if it was on the screen of a GPS receiver, so that as soon as you crossed their will invest line, you could close the sale? Unfortunately, no electronic device exists so far that I know of that can do that in selling. But the good news is there are two ways you can identify your position in the sales presentation and see how close you are to the prospect's will invest line. There are signals. First, your prospect might tell you how close you are by sending out investing signals. And as you know, an investing signal is anything a prospect says or does that indicates he or she has reached or soon will reach the decision to go ahead and invest. Or second, you can ask the prospect, "Hey, am I getting close to your will invest line?" Now, obviously, you don't use those words, and we'll discuss some specific questions you can use in a few moments. But for right now, let's identify the investing signals your prospect sends out to you. There are two kinds, verbal and nonverbal. What the prospect says and what the prospect does. And if you tune into them, they're just as clear as the signals your GPS receiver can send to those satellites way out there in space. When my Sunset Boat prospect, John Allen, said, "I want your boat," that was a verbal investing signal. Well, it was more like a scream than a signal. Usually it's much more subtle. You've heard these statements before from your prospects. "Well, you know, this looks pretty interesting. Gee, you know, I wish I had this last year. It would have helped me so much. Will you please cover that point again? That's so important to me. You know, I can't believe it took you so long to find me. This is great stuff. How soon can I get started? Will you show me and my staff how to use it when it comes? Can you really back up everything you just told me?" You can see on this last one how subtle an investing signal can be. If your prospect wasn't interested, why would they care if what you said was true or not? If they are interested, it's their way of getting reassured that they're about to make the right decision. An insurance prospect might signal with, "When would my coverage start?" A purchasing agent might signal with, "Well, you know, we need to get a purchase order out before the end of this month if I'm going to get this in this year's budget." A bank loan prospect might say, "Will that note be in just my name or my husband's name as well?" In a clothing store, you'd hear the prospect say, "Is the tailor in today so I can get fitted?" Or maybe less obvious, "How long do alterations take?" A verbal, nearly invisible signal could be just a sound like, "Hmm, oh, wow," or "uh-huh." Anything your prospect says or does that indicates they're close to or have passed the will invest line. It's a distinct sign of interest. Now, What about nonverbal investing signals? Things you can see your prospect do. Now, of course, if you're using some form of communication that doesn't allow you to see each other, this won't apply. But if you can actually see your prospect, the most obvious nonverbal investing signal you can pick up on is in their eyes. You might notice their eyes light up, or they might focus very intently on you and what you're showing them. Or if two or more people are your prospects, they might look at each other and nod, smile, or even, as I once saw, give a thumbs-up gesture. If you're presenting to a couple, they might hold hands or touch each other, suggesting that they're pleased with what they see and hear. Or they might pick up your materials, samples, or presentation sheets and look more closely at them. It could even be just looking more relaxed because, oh, the pressure of deciding is over with. I'm going to invest. How about touching their chin? One top 1% club member I know says anytime a prospect touches his or her chin, she feels the sale is a sure thing. She also says if they touch their nose, other than to blow it, it's a no-sale situation. Well, you check that one out for yourself and you decide. Begin immediately studying what you do when you are the prospect and you are interested and you're ready to go ahead. One woman told me she kicks off her shoes and rubs her feet together once she's reached her well-invest line. Now, I'm not suggesting you check the prospect's feet, but I sure am suggesting you observe very carefully your prospects and your own behavior. But what if you're not picking up any of these investing signals? Then what do? You put your presentation in neutral and in effect say to your prospect, "How am I doing? Are you ready to invest yet?" You can do that in a more tactful way. You can use trial close questions. Put your sales presentation on pause and ask your prospect for an opinion. That's the difference between a close and a trial close. A closing question asks for action and a decision. A trial close just asks for the prospect's opinion. And you should be using these throughout your sales presentation. If Ray, the air conditioning salesman, had just said something like, "Which one of these three units do you think would meet your needs the best?" Now that's an opinion question. So that means it's a trial close. And I would have said, "Well, I don't know. What do you recommend, Ray?" Using a 1 to 10 scale. You know, rating things on a scale of 1 to 10 is a great concept for use in your family, with your friends, and certainly with your prospects. In our family, we use it a lot. I'm talking to my daughter Jenny and her husband John and say, "1 to 10, how was that restaurant you went to last night?" Or about a movie, "1 to 10, how was it?" You see, if you just say, "How was the restaurant?" many people would respond, "It was good." But what does that mean? Is good a 10 to them? Or do they ever say, "Great"? Or the movie was okay. Okay, what is that, a 5 or an 8? So give 1 to 10 a shot and say, "Mr. Prospect, on a 1 low to 10 high scale, how would you rate what we've been discussing so far?" If a 10, you're at or over the will invest line. If 3, you've got a lot of selling left to do. Here are some other trial closes that you might use in your presentation. Remember, these are just opinion questions, checking where your prospect is. Okay, now I wrote them down for you, so let me read them to you. "Mr. Prospect, how does this sound to you so far? Just supposing you went ahead, how would you handle the dollars and cents? In your opinion, Mrs. Prospect, how does this compare to the ABC proposal that you looked at? How do you feel about this, Mr. Prospect? What are you thinking right now, based on what we've discussed? This is an excellent concept, isn't it?" Now, did you notice that last one? It was a closed question. The previous ones were all open questions, beginning with "how." For trial closes, a closed question is sometimes okay. Here are a few more. "Can you think of any reason not to go ahead?" This is what you've been looking for, isn't it? "Waiting just doesn't make sense, does it, Mrs. Prospect? Have you convinced yourself, or should I show you some more?" How helpful would those questions be in your presentation? That's my trial close to you. Trial closes seek an opinion, not a decision. They give you feedback on your progress. Remember, you need to know where you are in the selling process. Trial closes will keep you from getting lost in your sales presentation, just like that GPS receiver will keep you from getting lost in the woods. Okay, now, the closing questions. Based on the investing signals or the positive responses you get from your trial closes, you know it's time to seek a decision. So why do you need to ask your prospect to decide? Because selling is helping. And that means you need to help your prospects make the right decision. Just like a good accountant or a financial planner has to do with their clients to take action, to do something, to do the right thing. Just giving good advice isn't enough. Just suggesting to do this or do that isn't enough. Just hoping they will follow through isn't enough. An advisor who is truly concerned about helping is focused on action, getting something done. And that's what the closing process does in selling. It gets something done. Closing is the logical conclusion to an effective sales presentation. You close by asking a question, and the answer to that question either confirms that the prospect has decided to invest or indicates that they still need to see and hear more. The closing questions you ask should require your prospect to do something, to take positive action. Do this, go there, come here, fill this out, take this, okay it here, bring the bag of money over here. So a positive response to one of these questions means a sale. A negative response means you have an objection, a question, or an excuse. And we'll discuss these on the next message. But for now, let's focus on specific types of closing questions that you can adapt to your own selling situation. Just a reminder, though, unless action is called for, it's not a close. It's a trial close. Let's say that a young man asks his girlfriend, "Do you love me?" That's a trial close. No action called for. Then she says, "Oh, yes, I do love you." And then he responds with, "Should we get married now or wait till summer?" Now that's a close. So often ordinary salespeople think they're closing, but in actuality they aren't. Research done by Dr. Herb True of Notre Dame University found these shocking statistics in the results of his survey on closing. 46% of salespeople ask for the sale once and then never ask again in their entire sales presentation. 24% ask twice, 14% ask a third time, 12% ask four times, and 4% of all salespeople surveyed close five or more times. And Dr. True found that 60% of all sales are made after the fifth closing attempt. So without a doubt, a very small percentage in this research study, only 4%, are making 60% of the sales. How about Ray, that air conditioning salesperson who never closed, yet he was the company's top salesperson? There are usually exceptions to every rule, every survey or every research study, and he was one of them. But let's hope that you're not going to be like Ray. Let's plan on succeeding and asking the prospect to invest. After you've gotten a positive investing signal, there are so many different types of closing questions you can use. Here are a few, some of which may trigger some of your own ideas. The classic choice close. Which one would you like us to deliver on Monday, Mrs. Prospect? This one or that one? Would you rather stay with the inkjet or invest in the laser printer? Or would it be easier for you to set this up on a cash basis? Or would you prefer using our finance plan? Hey, don't be afraid to use this old classic. It's still very effective. You can say, would it be easier for you to call me later with a purchase order number? Or do you want to sign one right now? A choice is exactly that, a choice between two positives. Saying, do you want it or not, isn't the choice close. How many choice questions can you think of? Would you like to start coverage on your car right away, or wait till your present coverage expires in 3 weeks? Do you want the direct wired keyboard or the wireless remote? Next is the minor point close. Here's where you seek a decision on a minor point that automatically confirms the major decision. Dave, what initials would you like on the glove compartment door of your new sports car? You ask for a minor decision, and the major one follows. Imagine how a few gold initials is all it took to help Dave Everett drive off in a brand new automobile. I mean, how did that happen? The salesman spotted Dave's positive investing signals. His eyes, his face, his words of praise for the way the car looked and drove. He was over the will invest line, and the salesman stopped selling and closed. And you can do that too. Close. One top-producing retail sales pro I know uses this minor point close to sell computer systems. After narrowing down their choices to one specific computer, monitor, printer, and software package, he just holds up a box with a backup power supply unit and gently asks, "Would you like to include this backup power supply with your whole system?" A yes means a sale. A no means still more selling on the system, or a unit of conviction on the backup power supply device. The paperwork close. Here's where you simply pick up your pen and begin writing on your purchase agreement or order form, or start typing on your laptop. You might say something like this. Now, let's see, Mr. Prospect, what is your correct address? You look at the paper or the screen and write or type whatever the prospect tells you. Then you keep writing or typing. You're showing positive expectancy. I mean, how would you close if you knew your prospect would say yes? Act as if you couldn't fail. The paperwork close could also involve you writing down specific things they wanted. In selling Mastercraft boats, Debbie Hayes sells lots of accessories because it makes the joy of boating so much more fun. I mean, I should know. I'm now on my third ProStar 190 Mastercraft from the Hayeses. You can have a heater, a hot water shower, a computerized speed control for slalom course skiing, a bimini top, and oh yes, I've got them all. Debbie just uses her order sheet and closes on the accessories, a combination of all three closes, choice, minor point, and paperwork. She says something like, Joel, do you want me to put down all those accessories now, or do you want to hold off on the bimini top till summer comes? Yes, Debbie and Jim Hayes are really good. And in order to be really good, to get to that next level, the top 1% club, you've got to invest the time to think about your closing questions. To show you how, close. Here's where you show that your product will work. Mr. Prospect, would you like me to stop back the day we deliver, or should I wait a few days before going over your operating procedures? Offering instruction is a closing technique. Take a financial services professional helping an investor get started, say, in a mutual fund. The instruction close could be, well, would you like to go over what the quarterly statement looks like now, or should we schedule that when your first one comes, say, in about 3 months? You can usually give instructions on almost any product or service. How can you make that service and instruction part of your close? The might-miss-out close. Here you create the urgency to act now, or you're going to miss out. These are going fast, Mrs. Prospect. Would you like to take it with you, or should we send it next day delivery? This has been such a great offer. Our supply might not keep up with the demand. Should I put rush on your order, or is normal 10-day delivery okay? You know, as we discussed, this special sale is a rare occurrence. You need to get your order in before it's over. Should I check and see if we have that model G14, or do you want me to check on that upgraded model, the XL3? Now notice, these first five closing techniques all offer a choice. Many of them are combinations. You can use all of these closing techniques as either choice questions or minor points. Now the restaurant close. Here's where you just assume the answer is yes and proceed accordingly. I like to call this the restaurant close because when you sit in a restaurant, you're given a menu or a product list. After a few moments, a server comes to your table, takes out their order pad or purchase agreement and says, what can I get you folks today? Totally assuming you will give them the order, the sale. Why don't you do the same thing? Take out your order form and say, okay, let's get the paperwork out of the way. Do you use a middle name or initial? And just start writing. Or, let's see, you said you wanted both, plus the options. What else should I put down? Now, what would happen if the server in that restaurant wasn't a positive expectant closer? How would you react if, after looking at the menu, he hesitantly came up to you and said, did you want to order anything here? Your reply would most likely be, why? What's wrong with the food? Your closing questions need to show confidence and expectancy. If you convey doubt, fear, or even a slight hesitation to your prospect, they most likely won't invest. One other little reminder about your actions when closing. Don't alter your tone, your manner, your speaking speed, or your cadence. Just maintain the same mood. You know, you've seen and heard the ordinary salespeople say things like this. So, there you have it, the entire story, and how these amazing products can help you. Now, should I write up the order? Well, you probably wouldn't do that, but you might tense up slightly. Or, as one senior sales rep told me, whenever I was about to close, I'd curl my toes inside my shoes. You know, an observant prospect could pick that up. No, not the toes, but the tenseness that causes toes to curl. Your closing is just the natural next step in your sales presentation. So stay calm, stay confident, and stay cool. The repeat the question close can be used to answer a prospect's question with a closing question. The prospect asks you, well, how soon can I get it? The repeat the question close would be, well, how soon do you want it, Mr. Prospect? Or your prospect might say to you, is there any chance you could find one with a blue cover instead of that nasty-looking green one that you showed me? You could respond with, would you like me to specify blue only on your order? Here's another favorite among top sales professionals, the subject to close. In many cases, you can wrap up a sale by writing your prospect's objections right on the purchase agreement. Of course, you need to check your company policy before you make any commitment using this technique. For the subject to close, take out your order form or purchase agreement and say, Mr. Prospect, right here on your agreement, I'll write that this is subject to your ability to get proper financing. Or, this agreement is subject to your partner's approval. Write it all out and close by saying, you can just okay it right here. The subject to close means the agreement is subject to whatever they tell you. Many times, though, this close will reveal that the prospect has some other hidden objections that he hasn't told you about. If he won't go ahead and okay the agreement, then there must be some other objection. On the next message, we're going to get into a lot more detail on handling these objections. Remember, when you're below the will invest line, you get a no. When you reach the will invest line, you get a yes. These closes are just different ways of either getting a yes or finding out where you are in relation to the prospect's will invest line. Now, how about the reduce it down close? This is another basic closing technique, except here you can use it two ways. First, you can reduce the investment down to its lowest common denominator, and second, you reduce the promised benefit down. For this specific, let's use a term insurance policy for $1 million, and let's reduce the price down. Now, these numbers might not fit you, but they're right off a direct mail piece I got recently. Headline on the ad, what part of the life insurance price war don't you understand? Then it lists on a chart each premium based on age and sex and tells you to call a toll-free number. Well, you know they're selling low price, but let's just use it as our example. Say you're a 40-year-old female, and the annual premium is $753 a year for 10 years guaranteed. Do you want to buy it? Now, that's not a great close, but you might say yes. In this case, let's say you said no, it's just too much money. Now, let's start reducing down your $753 big number to smaller pieces. Mrs. Prospect, $753 is a lot of money when you look at it all at once. But your annual premium really breaks down to about $63 a month. That's less than $15 a week. As a matter of fact, it's exactly $2.07 a day. Isn't it worth it to protect your loved ones with $1 million worth of life insurance for only $2.07 a day? I guess so. Good. Let's see, we can get you scheduled for your physical exam next Monday afternoon, or would Wednesday morning fit your busy schedule better? So you get the point. Now ask yourself, how can you reduce your investment down into smaller size chunks so it's less imposing for your prospects? Now the other way to reduce things down is to reduce the benefits you're promising so they're easier to accept. Let's say your product can produce a dramatic savings for your prospect, and you can prove it with evidence in the form of testimonials and third-party data. How do you get your prospect to believe you? Reduce it down and make it almost impossible not to believe you and your promised benefits. Here's an example, a specific of the principle of reduced benefits. Mr. Prospect, you can see that by using this system, the Sassafras Corporation saved $193,000 the first year alone, and the Abracadabra Company saved $178,000 their first year. But let's be conservative. Let's say you save only half of that $178,000, which is $89,000. How would you feel about that? Well, gee, that'd be terrific, he says. Well, let's be even more conservative. Let's cut it in half again and say it's only $44,500 the first year. What would you think? Well, the prospect says, I'd like more, but $44,500 in 1 year, that's still pretty good. Okay, let's use $40,000 to round it off. Now you close the $40,000 benefit. Not the $89,000, not the $178,000, not the $193,000. This reduces their expectation and allows you the opportunity to thrill them. Then when you close, your prospect is already mentally agreeing, I know I can get that much savings. So you can close by saying, since the $40,000 is so realistic for your situation and your investment could easily be paid back in less than 3 years, do you want to issue a purchase order for the entire amount of the $108,570 investment? Or should we just bill you for half now and half on completion of the installation? That's a great close. Next, the balance sheet close. This was the first closing technique I learned when I got into sales. You know, it's so old, yet it is so effective, so very effective. But it's amazing how few salespeople use it. The top 1% club members sure do. You simply explain how one of the greatest Americans, Benjamin Franklin, made his decisions. It goes like this. Mr. Prospect, back in the 1700s, whenever wise old Ben Franklin was faced with a difficult decision, very much like the decision you're faced with here today, he simply took out a piece of paper, drew a line down the middle, and created a balance sheet. On one side, he wrote all the reasons why he should go ahead, and on the other side, he made a list of all the reasons why he shouldn't go ahead. With the list complete, he weighed one side against the other, and then made his decision. You see, he felt this way he would be sure of doing the right thing. Why don't we do that now? Then you take out a piece of paper, draw a line down the middle, and ask your prospect for all the reasons why your product is a good investment. Then you add as many things as you can think of to that side of the list. Then you turn to the other side and say, what should we put here? And you don't offer any suggestions yet. This will either help uncover objections or prove that your prospect has reached the will invest line. And if you really believe that selling is helping, you have an obligation to identify possible negatives and to be honest when it comes to this list of reasons not to invest. Now, wait a minute, Joel. Are you telling me that after all the work I've done, qualifying, adding need, use, value, and powerful units of conviction, I'm supposed to destroy all that and start talking to my prospect about negatives? You got it. That's right. Remember, find out what everybody else is doing, and then don't do it. Not many salespeople are willing to talk about the negatives. That's why you should. Plus, if you really believe selling is helping, you want your prospect to know the whole story. By the way, how will your prospects feel about you when they know that you're trustworthy, that you're totally honest, interested in them? Think about it. Okay, now back to the balance sheet close. When you use the Ben Franklin technique, you might want to write out your for and against list right on a sales brochure or a product pamphlet. It'll show the product and at the same time help your prospects see the benefits of investing now. So what negatives would you add to the balance sheet? Anything they should consider that's realistic. In many industries, the government has passed laws to protect consumers from dishonest salespeople. They require the company and its salespeople to provide a prospect with a full disclosure. These disclosure laws provide information to the prospect about any additional charges, what the actual interest payments might be, the risks involved in their investment, say in a mutual fund or an annuity. So now, what potential negatives should your prospect know about in advance? Let them know what they are and actually write them down. One other reason to add this is for your own protection. So often, when complaints are filed against salespeople, it comes down to a he said, she said statement. No real proof on either side. Great sales professionals save their presentation notes, especially this balance sheet close, to prove they did inform their prospect of possible risks. That's just something for you to consider. Now, before we go on, let me add just a little aside to this closing technique. Ben Franklin's wisdom has lasted over 2 centuries, and according to some historians, Franklin was the most versatile American who ever lived. Now, that's a pretty powerful statement. And I'm certainly not one to judge if he was or he wasn't. But when you look at his list of accomplishments, I mean, he was an inventor, a writer, a publisher, scientist, statesman, businessman, philosopher, and humanitarian. Franklin invented the bifocal glasses, the lightning rod, discovered the Gulf Stream, organized the first fire department in Philadelphia, established the first hospital in America, founded the first lending library, and created the United States Post Office. I mean, he was a man who knew how to make good decisions. So learn from Ben Franklin's wisdom and use the balance sheet close in your selling. Okay, this next close is, I'm sorry, close. This applies after the fifth close, and you've about given up. There's little or no positive feedback, no investing signals. Yet in your heart, you just know it's the right thing for that prospect to do. Here again is where your sincerity and personal integrity come in. So if you don't mean this, don't say it. Ms. Prospect, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I just didn't do a good enough job of explaining this new system so that you'd embrace it for the company. To help me in the future, what should I have done differently in explaining it? Two positive things can happen. You'll find out what you did wrong so you don't do it again. And second, you might get their real objection out in the open. Give it a shot, especially when you and your prospect have rapport, but still no sale. The kitten close. The old pros call it the puppy dog close. Now, you can call it the puppy dog, the kitten, or even the billy goat close. No matter what you call it, it works if you know you have an exceptional product that will exceed your customer's expectations, and you'll thrill them. It's the try it, you'll like it close. Of course, your company policy needs to be checked, as well as getting approval from your sales manager. If you can use it, it will help you close a lot of those tough prospects. It probably began in selling puppies in a pet store years ago and has progressed from there. Mr. Dad and Mrs. Mom, I know how difficult it is to decide on a new pet for your family. Will it fit in? Will your children take care of it? What's the pet's real personality? So what we'll do is give you a 14-day money-back guarantee that if you don't totally fall in love with this little golden retriever puppy, you just bring it back in 2 weeks, we'll give you back your money. No questions asked. Here, let me write that down right on your receipt. Now, of course, this will work most effectively with a tangible product, but it works well, too, with a service. You could say, if you don't like it, we can cancel it. Probably tens of thousands of kittens and puppies have been sold this way, and at least two pet goats. Well, I'm not sure of the exact number of puppies and kittens, but I know about the two pet goats because I bought them. Their names were Cindy and Lindy. When my daughters were little, I met a lady who raised goats. She sold me on the idea of what great pets goats are for kids. Hey, I'm not kidding. But of course, knowing nothing about goats, how could I justify buying one, no less two? So she used the billy goat close. Joel, just take these two goats home. Keep them for a couple of weeks. See if the girls like them. See how your three dogs and the burrow amigo get along with them. And if you're not happy, just bring them back. Well, the whole family, the dogs and Amigo, the burrow, all love the goats. Such fun. Plus, I mean, how do you tell your kids after 2 weeks that the kitten, the puppy, or the goats are going back? They'd rather send you back. So, Miss Prospect, let's install this new system. You use it for a few weeks. If it doesn't do the job, I'll take it back. No questions asked, no hassles. Okay? The next type of close is the would you if I could close. With this close, you simply say something like this to your prospect. Would you take it if we could deliver it in 3 days? You're adding a little extra value, which might be just enough to get your prospect up and over the will invest line. Remember the shirt salesman? If I could solve all your shirt problems, would you be willing to invest in more than just one or two? If your prospect isn't over the will invest line, your prospect will tell you no, and you just get back to adding new units of conviction. Remember, no doesn't mean no. It simply means you haven't reached the will invest line yet. You've got to add more need, use, and value. Next is the Columbo close. This one you can use when you're in your prospect's office or home. After you've made a good sales presentation, you've closed at least 5 or 6 times, but still haven't reached their will invest line, pack it all in. Gather up your sales material, thank your prospect for the opportunity to share the ideas, head for the door, and it's vital you actually get to the door. Grab the doorknob, and as you turn it, look back at your prospect and say, Mr. Prospect, just to clarify my thinking, what's the real reason you're not going ahead today? You know, in many cases, you're going to uncover the real reason why your prospect isn't going ahead. Then you can turn around, walk back to your prospect and say, oh, I'm so glad you told me that. It's my fault for not showing you how. Now you're right back into your selling presentation. I call this the Columbo Close because it's named after one of the great sales trainers of all time, TV show Detective Columbo, played by actor Peter Falk. you can sometimes catch it on those TV rerun channels. It was a pretty nonviolent show, with excellent writers, and it won many awards. None for what it should have, though, as a sales training show. Columbo was a master question asker and a magnificent listener. One sales manager I knew required all of her salespeople to watch it while they were all connected on a conference call. And at the commercial, she and her team would discuss the selling techniques Columbo was demonstrating in that show. If it's been a while since you've seen it, or if you've never seen it, Detective Columbo usually wore an old beat-up raincoat, held a dirty old unlit cigar in his mouth or his hand, and carried a little notepad and pen. Usually close to the end of almost every show, the villain, thinking that he had fooled this frumpy, confused-looking little man, would be caught by the Columbo clothes. Walking toward the door, about to leave, or actually leaving, and then suddenly coming back in, Columbo would scratch his head, look totally confused, and say, "You know, I hate to bother you, but there's just one little thing here. I'm sure it's nothing. I don't know." By this time, his suspect was so confident, he says, "Detective Columbo, what do you want to know?" And boom, out comes this insightful question, and Columbo usually breaks the case. The point is that by almost leaving, the prospect becomes so relaxed and confident that the decision-making chore is over, that they give you the really true objection. So give it a shot, but maybe without the raincoat and cigar. Next is the sincerity close. Be careful with this one. Use it only if you're 100% sincere, and it goes like this. "Mr. Prospect, I'm not leaving until you go ahead and make this investment. Everything you told me supports the investment we've been discussing, and I cannot, in good conscience, leave without having you make the right decision. What do I need to do to help you take action right now?" As you use any of these closes, think of the impact you make on others. Research studies conducted by Dr. Mehrabian at UCLA found that 7% of the impact you make is as a result of the words you use. 7% doesn't sound like much, but it's the basis of the remaining 93%. So choose your words carefully. Sometimes the exact same words mean very different things. As an example, the word buckle can mean fastened to, or it can mean fall apart, as in when the accused buckles under cross-examination. How about the word engagement, meaning a loving tie between two people? Or it could be a military battle killing hundreds. How about downhill? Oh, great, I'm on the downhill part of that big project, which means it's getting easier. Or when you say it this way, "Man, this company is going downhill," you mean it's getting worse. So pick your words carefully. They are the blocks you build your presentation with. 38% is how you say those words. For example, the words are, "I didn't say I was mad." Now, whichever word you emphasize changes the meaning of the sentence and your impact on the listener. "I didn't say I was mad. He said I was mad." "I didn't say I was mad. I wrote him about it." "I didn't say I was mad. I said he was mad." "I didn't say I was mad. I said I was disappointed." You get the point. Words are important, but it's how you emphasize those words that really counts. So be alert to the meaning that you're conveying to your prospect. And now that last big percentage, 55% of your impact, comes from what you're thinking and feeling deep down inside, your conviction, sincerity, and belief. Whatever way you feel inside, your prospect will get that message through your nonverbal communication. These are just a few of the closing techniques that professionals use. Keep in mind, the conscious-unconscious competents have at least 20 or 25 different ways to ask their prospects to come to a decision. They have learned them and they use them. So avoid asking the same closing questions each time. What happens if, right after you close, your prospect says with a half smile, "Hey, that was a pretty good close," or "Hey, good closing technique there"? Just smile as you say, "Well, thank you. I'm so glad you recognize good selling techniques, and asking for the sale is sure one of them." Another very important part of the selling process, as you know, is service after the sale. That's my favorite part, making sure you're thrilled with your investment. Now, seriously, when do you want me to schedule your delivery, Monday or Tuesday? Hey, don't be intimidated. Close again. So what if your prospect picked up on what you did? If your prospect is a sales professional and you don't close, you most likely won't create much confidence in your ability to help them. And remember to smile. It shows you're not taken aback or embarrassed. And by saying thank you, you show you have no fear, no worry. Then by acknowledging what the prospect picked up on and adding the service portion, you're back to selling again. And then you can close again. Either use the exact same close again or a new one. But you must close again. Since a big part of my career in selling years ago was directed to sales managers, vice presidents of sales, and top executives who had come through the ranks from a sales background, I would often draw a picture of the closing curve concept, the four horizontal lines, the arching sales presentation curve, then pointing to each line, I'd write on the bottom one starting point, the second one easy sale, the third one typical sale, and on the fourth line, at about the top of the arch of the curve, no sale. Then I'd say, as a sales pro, you know yourself how important it is to know where you are in the selling process. In our case today, where am I on this curve? You know, it's amazing how many times they'd say, well, I'm sold. That's it. Close. Settle the details. And of course, if the prospect said, well, I've got a lot of unanswered questions before I'm going ahead. Good, I'd say. Just to clarify things, what are they? So you give it a shot and see what happens. Preparation is vital. So be prepared and have a variety of presentations you can use. Like this young life insurance salesman who walked up to the receptionist and asked to see the company's sales manager. Ushered into the sales manager's office, he said meekly, "Sir, I don't suppose you'd want to buy any life insurance, do you?" "No," snapped the sales manager. "I didn't think so, sir," said the young salesman dejectedly, getting up to leave. "Wait a minute," said the sales manager. "I want to talk to you, son." The young salesman sat down again, looking nervous and confused. The sales manager said, "I train salespeople, and you're the worst I've ever seen yet. You'll never sell anything until you show a little confidence and accentuate the positive. Now, because you're obviously new at this, I'm going to help you out by signing up for a $10,000 life policy right now." After the sales manager had signed on the dotted line, he said helpfully, "Young man, one thing you have to do is develop an organized sales presentation and learn some specific closing techniques." "Oh, but I have," replied the salesman, now smiling. "This is my standard organized presentation for sales managers." Well, you know, it's cute, but oh so true. You need different approaches with different prospects. Now that you're thinking about ways to close, let's review what constitutes an effective close. Here are a couple of ingredients that we mentioned earlier. Effective closing questions should be natural and sincere. You see, if you really don't think the prospect needs or wants what you're selling, you're deceiving yourself and them. Be sincere and assumptive. Expect a yes. Act as if you could not fail. An effective close is assumptive, with physical action built in. Do something. Offer a choice between two positives. An effective close requires a response, either yes or an objection. One other important thing to do when you close: be quiet. Once you've asked the closing question, shut up. That's right. Don't say anything else. Just wait and wait and wait. Now, you've probably heard the old saying that after you've asked a closing question, you shouldn't say anything else because the next person who speaks loses. But we've already established that selling is a win-win. If you sell people what they need and want, how can they lose? So let's do away with that concept that someone has to lose. When you close a sale, you and your prospect both win. However, it's still very important not to say anything after you've asked your closing question. So yes, be quiet. Let your prospect think and reflect and be obligated to say something. And let your prospect reply. And if you wait and wait and wait and nothing is said, just smile and repeat the same closing question again. Now, if you get an objection, that's good. You can respond to the objection. You know, many salespeople ask, if I close again, won't this seem like high pressure? Well, in my opinion, high pressure only results when you close over a close. Many times you'll hear salespeople ask for a decision, get a no or an objection, then ask again, get another no or objection, and ask again. But they haven't added any new value. That's when a feeling of high pressure results. So each time you close and get a no or an objection, you have to add new units of conviction or put more positives on this scale. So whenever you get a no or an objection, smile and say to yourself, okay, let me add some more value. Increase the value and then close again. So it's not high pressure, it's just high-powered selling. The close only says, have I added enough value yet? Is it worth the dollars? When you get to their Will Invest line, your prospect will have seen the value and will then say yes. Then why do we sometimes fail to close? I mean, like Ray, the air conditioning salesman. Well, there are a couple of reasons. In some selling situations, the prospect closes himself. As in our elephant example. Remember how the salesperson never closed? The farmer just said, I'll take it. So if we hear that often enough, pretty soon we forget to close. I mean, selling air conditioning units during the summer when it's 100 plus degrees outside is not difficult. Another reason some salespeople don't close is the fear of rejection. They just want to be liked, and they think by closing, they won't be liked. Another excuse might be that our prospect is a friend, and we don't want to impose on that friendship. But think about it. If your product can help a friend, that's the first person you ought to be talking to. Here's a little aside. When you do call on a friend or somebody you know pretty well, acknowledge that right at the beginning of your sales presentation. You might say something like this, George, I sure appreciate the opportunity to share ideas with you. Let's forget our friendship for a moment. I'm here for business. So I've taken my friend hat off, and I have my salesperson hat on today. And regardless of what you decide, it will in no way affect our friendship. Is that fair? And now you go on with your sales presentation. Many times salespeople don't close because they don't understand the closing curve. They put their faith in callbacks. They make a good presentation, and then the prospect says, do you have a business card? And the salesperson believes this prospect will invest someday. But think about your selling career for a moment. Have most of your card collectors turned into customers and come back? I mean, once the presentation is over, your prospect's interest fades. He forgets what you told him, and the negatives creep in. The K&G study, which is one of the many studies on listening and retention, discovered that the average listener forgets 50% of what they hear 1 hour after they hear it, and 88% is forgotten after 2 days. So don't count on callbacks. What then should your closing strategy be? First, build a professional sales presentation showing need, use, and value. Next, look for investing signals. Use trial closes and follow up with a closing question. If you get a yes, the sale is made. And remember, if there's vital information that your prospect needs, give it to them after you've settled all the details. If you get an objection, listen. Determine what the objection means and then smile. You know exactly what it means. You're just not up to their Will Invest line yet. On the next message, we're going to cover lots of ideas on what to do after you've smiled. So here's one more story. It's a weird reason why some salespeople don't close. I call it the crisscross curtain syndrome. That's right. A woman I met at one of my sales seminars for the financial services industry came up at the end and shared this story. I'll never forget it. She was now the sales training director of a Fortune 1000 company who began her sales career right out of college in a direct in-the-home sales program. Her sales manager taught her a great lesson in closing on their very first day of field training. On that very first sales call to a beautiful home, as they walked up to the door, the manager stopped, turned around and said, "Let's go. They won't buy anything. We'll go next door." "Why?" the new sales rep asked. And the manager said, "Didn't you see those kitchen curtains? They were crisscrossed. People with crisscross curtains just don't buy." Now you say, that's the stupidest thing you ever heard, right? I agree. It's stupid. The lady telling me the story agreed it was stupid. But she said her sales manager believed it. As young and as inexperienced as she was, she knew it was ignorance or superstition or just insanity to decide if a prospect would buy or not buy based solely on how they hung their curtains. So she said, "Joel, I decided that until I closed at least 5 times, I would never know if they were or weren't a prospect. And that's how I train my salespeople today. I tell them, leave your superstitions and assumptions outside of the sales arena. I want facts. You close 5 times, and then you decide." Wow. As we know from Dr. Herb True's research, she was right on target about the 5 closes. And she was also right on target about superstitions. I'm sure you've heard these common superstitions. Black cat crosses your path, bad luck. Carrying a rabbit's foot, good luck. Hey, it didn't work for the rabbit. To avoid bad luck, knock on wood. Yeah, if it's a prospect's door, it's even better luck. How about the number 13? bad luck, especially Friday the 13th. Some buildings have no 13th floor for that reason. And in Japan, the number 4 is like our 13. So in Japan, many buildings have no 4th floor. Throwing rice at a wedding ensures a happy marriage and lots of kids. Finding a 4-leaf clover is good luck. Breaking a mirror is bad luck. Many smokers believe lighting 3 cigarettes on 1 match will bring bad luck to all 3 people. Hey, now that one I agree with. Smoking doesn't bring you anything but bad results. But it's not because of the match. Do you know how that 3 lights on a match began as a superstition? It was back in 1914. World War I was raging, and when soldiers wanted to smoke and struck a match to light their own cigarette, then a buddy's, and then his buddy's, the match stayed lit long enough for an enemy sniper to take aim and shoot one of them. So unless you're in a sniper's crosshairs, not much bad is going to happen to you from just lighting a match. And I can also assure you that as a sales pro, nothing bad is going to happen to you when you close. When you close without fear, without fumbling, and without fail. Now, here's what you can do right now. 7 steps. Number 1, visualize the closing curve and the will invest line. Number 2, sell the need for your product, its use and value against the cost of the investment in your product. Number 3, write down all the investing signals you know and add new ones as you observe them. Number 4, write down at least 5 different trial closes you can use. Number 5, structure 10 closing questions. Actually, write them out and practice them until you feel comfortable using them, so they're natural. Number 6, start closing early and often in your sales presentation. And number 7, prepare, prepare, and prepare some more. You know, it's as easy as A, B, C. Always be closing. Closing will help you see exactly where you are in the selling presentation. If you get a yes, then you're above the will invest line. If you get an objection, then you haven't reached the will invest line yet. So as you can see, closing is like having your own GPS receiver. It will show you exactly where you are in your sales presentation and help you get to where you want to go, the sale. So make sure you ask for the sale without fear, without fumbling, and without fail.